Hello and welcome back to the Left Field Thinking podcast. Today we're talking with former GB and England centre-back and Commonwealth Games bronze medalist Ollie Willars. Ollie is currently playing for HGC in the Netherlands and formerly, of course, played for me at Knox Trent University, but he doesn't like to mention that. We're going to be talking all things England men, previewing their performance at the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. Enjoy. Hey,
yo, mate, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Good, man. Good.
How was your cycle?
I'm good at it now, mate. I've been here for a year, so
yeah, that's very cliche.
I'm fully immersed into Dutch life.
So when you're cycling to hockey, where do you put your stick?
Good question. To be fair, my stick is always at the club.
Oh, right. You're big time, aren't you?
Yeah, it's it, mate. I got my own locker and everything.
I was wondering if you'd put it in, like, if you had a basket. Like, would you stick
Funny
it
you
in?
Say that. I did have a basket on the bike, but the bike got stolen. So the current bike doesn't have a basket.
Is the basket the hot property then? Do you think that's where it was stolen?
I don't know, mate. To be fair, anyone that stole that bike's got a real problem. I'm not going to lie, because it was a terrible bike.
Oof. And in Holland as well, they've got a lot of choice.
Oh, mate, bikes get stolen here for fun because they get sold on, and I think they quite often like the not so good bikes. I think
it's a bit edgier.
Yeah, and easier to sell on, I think, because right. Usually if someone loses them, they're not that bothered about trying to find them. Whereas the expensive ones, people like, I guess, potentially look on like sites where they're sold and stuff like that. So yeah, so it makes for. Yeah, I think it's quite a hot market, that, you know, bikes and hot.
Yeah, I'd just like to say as well, Ollie, thank you for being the best prepared for a podcast. I've not had anyone come on yet who's gone and got their hair done immediately beforehand.
But you can't see me, though, so it's not worth it.
Oh, well, you can tweet me.
Yeah, to be fair. My hairdresser, me, Alan, and Zach all go to basically the same one, and they're one of the guys out of the two is crazy, but they're good fun, so we always go to the same place. But you know me, mate, hair's important.
Do you want to shout out to your hairdresser just in case anyone's ever in?
That's a good shout out to Timmy and Rob.
Might get you a discount, man. You never know.
Hey, we go. Basically, if you go every 3 weeks, you get like a cheaper haircut. So us three always pay the cheaper price because we go.
Right. So, hello, Oliver Willars. How are you in general?
Good, mate. I am very well. I've had a nice summer off, which is the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
To have no hockey, which is really nice. We started training last night. So I'm currently sat here in pain in my chair, sore muscles. You know, when you don't play hockey for eight, there's no preparing. You can do as much running as you like and
glutes and back,
but there is no preparing to actually getting back on the field. But it was back to training last night. It's been a nice summer, a few holidays. I was in Canada last week playing the Canada Cup, which was entertaining. Fun tournament, but crazy. Like it was like the circus. It was absolutely madness.
Where was that, on the West Coast?
Yeah, Vancouver.
Yeah,
but it was good fun. Like a really good tournament. If anyone ever gets the opportunity to go there, it's definitely worth going because it's just good fun, entertaining. But yeah, we started last night, and I think we're six weeks away from the first game. So loads of time to get the hockey stuff up to speed.
How's your first year been out there?
Good, yeah. We were we made playoffs. We lost to Bloemendaal in game three, which was disappointing. We didn't play particularly well in the first game. So I don't know how well people know it, but basically the Dutch playoffs here is like a best of three, and the lower ranked team play at home first, and then the higher ranked team play at home for the next two games if that's needed. So we. We lost the first game to Bloemendaal 3-0. It was a close-ish game. They were stronger, to be completely honest. Yeah. No point trying to pretend they weren't. But we played an okay game in that. But we had I think 12 people in our team first ever playoffs, and the playoffs here in Holland are just very, very different. I think for me as well, it was definitely not overawed by the situation, but I certainly hadn't. It was a long time because of COVID and everything. It was a long time since I played in a really high pressured game, probably since the Olympic qualifier.
Yeah.
And I played all right, but it's classic, isn't it? But in the build up to the second goal, I think I was involved in the phases of play that could have prevented it, I think.
Yeah.
It's never just one mistake. But I think then the second game we played a really good game, and we beat them 3-1 at their place, which was a bit of a shock. I think we rattled them a little bit because I think they were expecting to get it done that day. And then we took them to the Sunday, and we were winning 1-0 with about, I think, 17 minutes left on the clock or something, maybe a bit more, 20. And they scored two goals in 3 minutes, and it just changed that. We got a yellow card, they scored a corner, and then they scored again, and it just changed the complexion of the game a little bit. But it was a hell of an experience. And I think with the league here, there's just no, there's just no easy games. I mean, that's the easiest way of explaining it.
How would the sort of training environment of the club compare to being in the centralised programme?
Yeah, definitely. Because obviously with the centralised programme, we didn't really get much contact time with our clubs.
Yeah.
Which I think has probably been a criticism, or one of the criticisms of the central programme. So I think there's loads of good bits about it, but I think also the criticism is that as internationals, we missed way too many, maybe not missed, we did miss games. I'm not going to pretend we didn't. We missed games, and I think also we didn't have much time with our club's training.
Yeah.
Whereas here, the clubs take a real priority. And then the international players do train with the national team. I think it's usually, especially now in the build-up to the World Cup, I think they'll train like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays, but then they're with their clubs quite a lot as well. They don't, I think maybe our boys miss one session, so we only train three times a week, which I think is the least in the league, in the Hoofd class.
Yeah.
But we kind of get an extra session on a Tuesday, so we do running sessions on Tuesday mornings to try and get kind of like a double training day effect.
Yeah.
But I think it's good for me. Our coach is about to change. Paul's going to coach the Dutch women. So we lose him at Christmas. But his philosophy is very much like we do three sessions a week, but there we go for it. They're hard sessions. He really manages them, the minutes. There's a big thing I always say about Paul's sessions is that there's never any minutes lost in the session. I think, you know, quite often when we coach, or because obviously I coach as well, it's easy to lose time by moving goals or setting the pitch up. There's no time lost in his sessions. So if we train, if he's saying we're doing 70 minutes of work, we do 70 minutes of hard work, and there's no time lost. If you have 2 minutes to go and get a drink, you have 2 minutes to go and get a drink, and you're back training again. So I think he's really good at setting the sessions. And that's one thing I've learned from the way he coaches, is that there's no kind of no time lost in the sessions, which I think is a really, really valuable lesson for any coach to take. Actually, it's amazing. If you actually reflected on your session, how much time do you lose?
It's that argument of ball rolling time, isn't it? If you monitor how long the ball is actually rolling and in play for in your training sessions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good metric.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. And I think that's the big thing. I think the training is really hard. The level's really high. There's no excuses here for not training. I think sometimes we're like, oh, we have work, or it's my friend's birthday. There's some terrible excuses out there, isn't there? But there is no excuses for not training. If you're injured, yeah, you don't train, but there is no excuses for not training. Of course, now and again, if there is something more important, Paul or whoever allows that. But I think here there really is, everyone trains. And even if you work a job, I think quite a lot of people that have jobs here, their employer is really understanding that they play high level hockey and are supportive of that. So even the guys that are like club hockey players, their employers are really understanding of that, if that makes sense.
Do you think that's just because how the game is perceived in Holland?
Yeah, I think that probably has definitely has something to do with it as well. And I think that's maybe where they've got their club game to, a place they've got it to.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think there just is a general understanding from the employers that, yeah, hockey is really important. And also for the club players, they also, they are committed to their training. They're fit. I think the general level of fitness is, and skill is really high with their club players.
Yeah.
There is still, even though it is not necessarily professional, there are parts of it that are, but obviously also you need to have another job. It's hockey. You need to have another job to keep going with it. But I think just the general level is just really high and the commitment level is just so, so high. And I think that's why the club game is at the level it is.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about the England men in the build-up to the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I was speaking to some of the boys, actually, literally was exchanging some messages with a few of them this morning.
You got any inside goss for us here?
I haven't got any real inside goss. I know I think they've got the day off today. I know that, and I think they're all venturing out of the village to go and get a coffee or whatever. I think that seems to be a real feature of any trip, is trying to find the best coffee shops. And when you wind down, it's kind of go to have a coffee and everyone sits down and chats. But I think it's going to be interesting, really. The Commonwealth Games are always really interesting as a tournament, because I think you get to play against nations maybe that you don't normally get to play against. So I think the boys and women both start against Ghana this week.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it'll be the first time we've probably played them, I imagine. So that'll be super interesting. But then obviously you go from playing Ghana to potentially playing Australia, New Zealand, India. So there's a real difference in the games and your approach. And I think you have to take every game seriously, regardless of who you think you're playing against. So I think that always brings a different component to the
tournament. There's some prep matches going on, obviously, at the moment. And I know yesterday Ghana drew with Pakistan.
Nice. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I think the thing is I think if you, from my experience, you never read into the practice games.
No.
There'll
be all sorts going on with them.
Yeah, exactly. There's all sorts. They usually reduce minutes, maybe. You might try some different bits. And there's also naturally a freedom that comes with playing in practice matches of pressure. There's no pressure on them, right? You just go and play. I think that can sometimes create a false perception maybe of where teams are at. But I think we always used to have a bit of a running joke that if we won practice games, it wasn't a good thing. if we're not losing practice games, then we're not ready for the tournament.
It's like you never really want to start a tournament too well.
No, exactly. Yeah, and if you're flying in your practice games, then you fear for what's to come.
Yeah, the only way is down.
Yeah, exactly. So,
do you know? Do you remember Ali Ganzafar?
Yeah, I remember. Well, I think that was when I first started out playing.
So he's gone in from May. He's taken over as head coach of Ghana.
Really interesting, because I think I played against him when he was at Bowdoin.
Yeah, and he was at Deeside for years after that.
And I played him maybe in a England Hockey Cup game or something then. But yeah, he's a good player, could flick a ball for sure.
He could flick a ball.
Yeah, he's a nice player. But interesting that he's gone there. So, I mean, teams like seeing how Ghana, it would be so interesting to see how they're doing. It's great for those nations as well to also experience those. And I think, of course, you want to be successful, and obviously every nation has different aspirations.
Yeah.
I think that the tournament's great because you get this multi-sport feel to it all, and just even being in the village and the atmosphere, I think, is always great. So yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to see how some of those nations perform.
There's a lot of ranking points attached to the Commonwealth Games this time, which
more than previously. Do you think?
Yeah, I think it's four times ranking point tournament. So that's
interesting.
I don't think it used to be that at all.
No, I think I agree. I don't think there was necessarily a weight on a huge weighting on the ranking points. So again, interesting.
I mean, that adds a lot of spice, in particular looking at maybe pool games. You've got New Zealand playing Australia, and I think the big one for England is England India.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's always, I guess as an with the English team, I think it quite often ends up being the same four teams that make the semi-finals.
Yeah.
But I think last time round, the Gold Coast, we had a bit of a, we didn't have a shock. Well, it wasn't a shocker. It's probably not the best way of putting it, but it was a bit also. We played India in our, I don't think it was the last group game, but I think we were 2-0 up, and we basically let two goals in the last 2 minutes or something. We basically messed up. We were either 2-0 up and we drew 2-2, or we were 2-1 up and 3-2. It was something like that. But either way, it meant that we ended up playing Australia in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And also the game, I think they went to kicking back and they scored late on, and or they got one back with a few minutes left. It might have ended up being a draw, and they went to kicking back and they scored with pretty much the last touch of the game.
I love a kicking
back. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's a whole nother debate, isn't it? The old kicking back. For me, I don't think it always works, to be completely honest. But
I think the impact of kicking back is not really the extra man. It's how the other team react.
The mentality of it, yeah.
Yeah, they panic. The opposition always panic if you, well, they used to anyway, if you go kicking back, and they retreat instead of just, I mean, for me, I'd just leave someone in the D.
Yeah,
and I think, come on then.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the kicking back, for me, I would use it usually, or I would use it if the opposition, if maybe we're chasing the game, but the opposition had a card. I think then you can get, with the those two extra players, you can get a real advantage.
Yeah,
I think with just the one extra player, I think teams are pretty well set up now to sit a little bit deeper and then counterattack. And I think you only need to look at so many. Of course, it works definitely with the mentality, and I completely agree with what you're saying. But so often you just see a breakaway goal where the opposition put it into an empty net.
I also think, like, the rule change to actually get rid of it and just go to 11 outfield players, I do not think makes the game any safer. Because you'll still get people doing stupid things to try and stop the ball going in the goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, you just can't kick it anymore.
Well, I think I remember playing in, I think it was Bhubaneswar in India, and I remember playing against Germany, I think. Or maybe we weren't playing, maybe we were watching, I don't know, but Germany went to kicking back and Mo Fazda was the kicking back, and he was brilliant at it, but just sliding everywhere. Basically literally playing like a goalie, but of course, what a player he was, but just general game intelligence, and then completely suited him for that role.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one, isn't it?
So where would you be going? You're saying that the lads are probably off for coffee. Where would you go around Birmingham Uni for coffee? Is the village in Birmingham Uni?
I think, yeah, it's on campus.
Is it? That's a nice place.
I got sent a few videos of the stadium and stuff, and it looks really, really good spot. Kind of in front of the big tower that's obviously so, I guess, iconic with Birmingham University. I hate to say it, but so I think it'll be a really, really good event. And of course, I think the big thing for any of the British players, the English, Scottish or Welsh, is that it's so close to home, which I think makes it so much special, more special, because family and friends can come. So I think that has a real significant part to play.
That's where the Midlands is a great location, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think it'll be a great, I have no doubt it'll be a great tournament. I think it always is. I think there's just something about it. It's probably doesn't sound as glamorous as maybe previous editions of the Commonwealth Games or other tournaments, but actually I think it'll be a fantastic place. And like you said, Birmingham's still a brilliant city.
Good night out.
Very true, yeah.
Yeah, last night will be great. I'll have a lovely time.
Off to Snobs.
Yeah. Although Snobs isn't the same anymore. Like, since they've redone Snobs and it's moved.
It's, did you, got, Because we're too old, mate.
Yeah, well, snobs used to be the most, like, vile place in the world. And that just added a lot to it.
I'm sure a few of the lads will be enjoying themselves on the final night.
Yeah, yeah.
As you always do at the end of a tournament.
What's the best end of tournament night out you've had?
Oh, that's a good one.
I think it's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one. We've had a few for sure. One that does definitely stand out, and I'm sure a lot of people would back me up on this, was the Aslan Shah in like 2017. When we kind of went not unexpectedly, but it was like we ended up winning and we beat Australia in the final. And I remember that night was very, very entertaining. It involved a lot of I won't go into too many details, but it involved a lot of dancing on bars and drinking, and it was particularly enjoyable. That's definitely it.
Drinking water and
yeah, exactly. Rehydrating.
Yeah.
Electro tabs, just yeah. And obviously they send you a bit crazy.
And the
exactly. Important. Yeah. Lots of stretching up against the bar and kind of raising your arm and stretching your lats and in everything as you drink that pint of water.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, that's a good one. We've had some good ones though, of course, because I think always you have this huge pressure of a tournament, and I think it's always a release. I think the one after Australia last time, the Gold Coast was a really fun night as well. I think they always are, because everyone's just happy, especially if the tournament's a success.
Yeah.
And you win something. I think 2017 Euros was a cracking night. I remember that for lots of reasons. But yeah, it's good, mate. I think you need it. I think it's important to recognise that you train hard, and ultimately we do it because you want the success of winning. I think. Yeah. No point. That's a big thing. And then you have to have that release. And what's the point of doing it if you can't enjoy yourselves and celebrate with the team? That's why we all play hockey, because we enjoy being in the team. And I think that's a real big part of it. Whether you play at any level, I think the social aspect of sport is so important.
I suppose particularly as well at the Commonwealth, when you'll know a lot more closely a lot of the athletes, because you've got a load from the UK. Most of the players, or it will be a core of players in a lot of the teams that will have done, you know, a couple of seasons in Australia or New Zealand. I would imagine there's quite a lot of chat that goes on between the groups.
Yeah, I think so. I think you ultimately get to a point where you know people from different nations. So whether when you finish games, you chat, or whether you're in the bar. I think I remember last time after. after the Gold Coast, we were in a bar and we ended up somehow in the bar within the campus sending a plant pot round most people's heads, chanting a very silly chant. But I think that we got on really well with a lot of the Kiwi lads.
Yeah.
And that kind of ended up, with their help, creating an enjoyable atmosphere.
Yeah.
But I think you just know so many guys just through playing. And now, of course, you like you said, you play overseas, you end up playing against these guys week in, week out, so that you naturally get to know people, so I think it makes, again, for a really enjoyable experience.
So if we're looking at this England team, very, very attacking, I would say. I suppose there's been from the original squad that was sent out, Samford's now not in it, and Nick Park's not in it, and Reece Smith and Ian Sloan have come in. I mean, Sloan's obviously incredibly experienced. There's not many what you would call defenders in that side.
Yeah, I think Stanley's got a bit of a problem with his hamstring, I think, which has been ongoing. And then I think Parky broke his hand or something, I think in the last training match or game against Scotland, I think, last week. So it's an interesting one. Yeah, I think there's definitely when you look on paper, less out and out defenders within the team. But I think it's exciting, isn't it? I think they there's definitely a lot of talented players within the squad. And of course, I think Revs is now only just kind of starting to work with the team. I think the last few Pro League games, Zach was still leading that, and I think obviously slowly now you'll start to see Revs's stamp on the team, I guess.
What do we think that's going to look like? I mean, obviously under Danny it was really conservative. And actually from the outside, quite frustrating to watch, because I don't think it gave the best platform necessarily for some of our really creative players to flourish. And you don't have to say much on that. But how do you think Revs will look at the game and will change the team?
I think he'll play for sure, see the game differently. I think he'll want to play high intensity non-stop. From the way he coaches on the field, he brings a real... I mean, I only had a handful of sessions coached by Revs, because he came in a little bit and helped out with us. And
yeah,
I think the energy he brought to the way he coached, I think you'll probably see with his teams. So I expect the team to try and play at a real high intensity, both directions.
And I think
he'll expect that. I think they'll try and press, whether that's over the full pitch or even from kind of more of a half court. But I think it won't be like a passive half court. I think it'll be looking to really, when the time's right, spring out. Everyone will spring out. So I think it'll be good to watch. I think there's a lot of skillful, creative players within the team, and I think Revs will give them a platform to play like that. So I think it'll create really interesting. I think of course the longer term goal, they'll definitely want to win medal at this tournament, but I think the longer term goal will be the World Cup in January.
Yeah,
I think it has to be. But
and quite a young team. I mean, building towards Paris as well.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I think it's definitely, there's always a changing the guard or whatever, and you can't play forever, so there's always going to be different players within the squad. So I think that'll be interesting. I think, like you said, when we go back to how Revs will play, I do think he'll give the guys an opportunity to play and play with freedom. So I think that'll be interesting to see, and I think this is a great tournament to do it, because you have some big games. You're going to have to go toe-to-toe with what you'd class as some of the bigger nations, but also some of the other games are a bit tricky, and you have to be able to play at the right level and get the results and the points on the board in those games as well. Because if you don't do that, then you've got no chance of getting to where you want to get to.
So where do you think success would be? So obviously, I think they have to go semis.
Yeah, definitely. I think they'll be disappointed if they don't win a medal.
Never done better than bronze at the Commonwealth, England.
Yeah, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
I think definitely the last two that I played in, we ended up with Australia in the semi-final both times. Last time we got outplayed, and 2014 we got outplayed. I think 2018... I think we should have got something out of the game, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
They played a lot of the end of the game with a man down, at some points two men down, and we just couldn't score. They sat really deep in a zone, and they were just, I mean, they had some real experienced players in there, Yanolzis, Zalewski, just players that had been there and done it, and we just couldn't find a... We were relatively new and probably hadn't actually spent enough time talking about playing how we wanted to play, with maybe when we were playing against a man down or with the kicking back. Of course we knew it, but I think also you can always talk about it and improve it. And I think actually at that point our focus hadn't been on that. It was more around our general play, and that was really good. And we had a good tournament. We just couldn't quite turn Australia over.
Yeah. I think Australia in this tournament are going to be, as per usual, really strong.
Yeah. I think they just played. I was one of the Dutch boys. Is in. I live with him here, and they've just played against them the last couple of days. And I think Australia won the first game 3-0 against Holland, and then Holland won 3-2 yesterday.
Right.
So I think, yeah, I think they'll be ready to go. Ready to go by the sounds of it. Yeah, I think they've been there. So I think they've never not won it, right? I think they've won
every. Yeah, they've won every tournament.
Which is crazy as well. So it'd be interesting, but I think the team and the mentality within the England team will be that they want to medal, and I think they will want to beat the bronze, like you said previously.
They've had a great 12 months, the England men's team. Probably not just because you've stopped playing, Ollie, but
started with that.
World ranking sixth, finishing sixth in the Pro League, and looking back over the Pro League, I mean, they did the double over Spain. They absolutely smashed Spain in that 6-1, the first game in Feb. They had a good ding-dong with India, 3-3, and then a 4-3 loss. Beat Germany once, back-to-back wins over France and South Africa, who are, you know, maybe will represent probably more of the standard of some of that bottom end of the Commonwealth pool. And then leaving probably the two best teams in the Pro League this year, Belgium and Holland. The 2-2 draw with Belgium was a great result. Then they got a bit of spanking. And then this actually the second game in England against Holland was a 6-3 loss. They played really well and looked quite exciting. So I think from an England point of view, coming in, actually, it's not been a bad year.
No, I agree. I think, I agree. I think there's been some really nice performances, and I think you can see there's definitely potential there. I think ultimately, if you want to be meddling at in the big competitions, it comes down to the consistency. And I think you can see from the results, there's still maybe not quite the consistency there, which I think is just completely down to experience. And I think same with the women's side. I think you watch them play, and one game they're brilliant, and then the next they're not so good. So, and I think again that's because of a lot of new players.
With the women's side, they actually managed to have a pants half and then quite a good half against Argentina. So they did it in a game. The inconsistency was in a game in the World Cup.
Exactly.
First half, they were, I thought, pretty poor and really quite negative. Second half, they looked a completely different team.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the big thing, isn't it? And I think that's because you have newer players in. Just that consistently. I think that game for the women against Argentina was almost like a, not nervous first half, but kind of feeling out or what they like. In a team. Some of them not played in big games. Of course, there's a lot of them that have, but some of them are not played in the big games. And I think you could see that. And then the belief came, and then they showed how close they were to it.
Yeah. So,
and I think the same with the men. I think it's getting to the point where you can just be consistent of playing to your level. Because you look at your Belgians, for example, and your Hollands, when they're not quite playing their best, they still stay in the games. Whereas maybe what happens when we don't quite play our best, the games get away a little bit. Yeah, the games get away a little bit from us. So I think that's the I think that's the big thing, is the consistency comes. So then when you're not playing quite your best, you still stay in the matches, and the matches don't run away from you.
And I suppose if looking at the pool, you know, you've got Ghana first, then Wales, then India, then Canada. Wales is potentially, I think, the banana skin.
Yeah, I think looking at it, I think Ghana, to be honest, I don't knew anything about them. You just told me Ali coaches them, so that's the only thing I know.
Yeah, they came fifth in the African Cup of Nations.
Exactly. So you'd expect that to be a relatively straightforward game, to be complete. Yeah. No disrespect to Ghana.
Yeah.
I think the game against Canada, again, should be similar. I think they've had quite a big turnover in players from the Olympics, and they're having a bit of a change within their squad.
And they're missing quite a few as well for this tournament.
And exactly.
They'll be... I was talking to Scott Tupper the other day. We had him on the pod. And so he obviously stepped away after Tokyo. He was saying that success for them is actually getting through the tournament and seeing who from their sort of newer caps are actually probably going to be long-term international players.
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think it will be, yeah, for them, we'll definitely be testing, like you said, players out. They've got a lot. We played with one, Gordon Johnston, one of the Canadian boys. I think he was saying there was like six, I don't know if he said six or eight. This is just completely from our conversation. I can't remember. But I think he said six or eight players on zero caps, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, that's huge. And going into, yeah, it's huge, isn't it? So I think that should be a relatively straightforward. And like you said, the Wales one's always is feisty. It's a fiery game. I think we played them in Gold Coast. I think we were 2-0 down at half time. Oh, 2-0, 3-0 down, maybe. I think 2-0 down, and we won 3-2 or 4-2 in the end. But I remember we were losing at half time, and it was really we didn't play badly in it, but I think they scored first and they got their tails up a bit. And of course, it's a massive game. Those games are, and they're different games. They're not like your normal games of hockey. There's different feelings, especially for them. I think
they obviously drew as well with England in the, you might have been playing in this,
yeah,
game.
Euros, Euros 2019 we drew 2-2. So I think they're definitely, they're improving. They've got some really, really good players in the team. So there's no point saying they haven't or pretending they haven't. So I think it'll be a really good game. And I'm sure they'll go into that really fancying their chances. I think they will, for sure. But I think if the English team play well, then I think they still haven't enough quality to win that game. And then the India one's really, really nice game. I don't know if it actually happened, but I remember being told that the India squad were going to come, or the India team were going to come with a slightly different squad to maybe normal. I don't know whether that's gone through, because I think they have the Asian Games straight after, is it?
Oh, good question. We've done our India episode, so I should know this, but off the top of my head, no idea.
Yeah, that's all right. I think I'd be interested to see what the Indian team's like, but I think that'd be the real decider. In the group, as long as the Wales game goes well. So it's interesting. I think, yeah, like you said, the Wales and India games will be very different to the Canada and Ghana games, I imagine. So
yeah,
and it's just about building up, because ultimately you want to get to the semi-final. It's about getting to that semi-final point where you're really raring to go against whoever you have to play.
And hopefully, as I say, I mean, hopefully not Australia, because they're probably the ones. I mean, they're head and shoulders, I think, the best team in this tournament.
Yeah, definitely.
So if you avoid them in the semis and you can win your semi, then you're guaranteed a medal, aren't you? So
yeah, exactly. And I think there's no point pretending Australia aren't the best team. They got the silver at the Olympics. The team's pretty much the same.
They've got goals everywhere.
Yeah, they've got so much. They've got quality all over the pitch. So there's no point pretending. But also, in a one-off game, yeah, I think the English side can beat them for sure, as probably India could, and so on. So, I think on paper, Australia are definitely the standout. But you know what hockey's like in any sort of one-off game, and I think it's about when England, hopefully, when England get to play them, is like you said, it would be in the final. But
yeah.
A lot of hockey to play before you get to that point.
Looking at individuals, who's going to be your standouts, do you think, in this England team?
Good question. I was actually joking with Griff before this podcast that I was going to slate him in it, winding him up. So if he is listening, I'm not going to slate him. I'm not going to give him a stick. But I think. For me, the real, I guess, when you look at the experience within the squad, you are going to be looking at your Ropes, Griff, Wardy, Brendan, people that have played now quite a lot of caps, I think, are going to be important that. But for me, I think when you look at standout players and players that are really going to make a difference for the team, I think Ollie Payne in goal, I think.
I think he's
Bashley becoming one of the best.
Yeah, definitely.
To be honest, or my feeling, I think he's world class. Is my personal opinion.
Yeah.
From what I've seen of him in training and now in matches, and I think he's so makes everything look so easy. So I think.
And he said, as you said earlier, you know, about the top teams being consistent, he consistently is excellent.
Yeah, exactly. I think for sure. So I think he's super important. I think Zach Wallace, I think, is to stand out. I think yeah. If you're looking at players within our squad that are world class, for me, he fits that bracket.
Yeah.
I still think, and I think he'd even admit it, there's still parts of his game that. Yeah, to be, you know what I mean, to be in that bracket of world class, I think it's still things he'd want to work on.
I think, you know, actually, that's where my sort of experience of Revs, that's where I think he will add real value. He is absolutely meticulous with his development of technique with players.
Yeah.
And I think taking someone, I mean, Zach Wallace could be the best player in the world, potentially.
Yeah, I agree.
In you know, 3 years' time, Revs is possibly the perfect person. It depends how they get on together, but I think.
I think completely agree. I think everyone's seen him play. Speaks for itself.
Yeah,
the level he can play at, but I think he's hugely important. I think the way he plays the game to be as an attacking impact. Or to create the attacking impact he does from right half where he plays at the back end of the pitch is incredible.
Yeah.
So for me, I think he's hugely important. And I think Ropes as well. I just think I think he had a really good season out here in Holland, and I think he again just offers a lot. I think he's different and unique how he plays. I think he's so athletic in his. His plays up and down the pitch, and I think he makes stuff happen. So I think those three are really, really important.
Yeah.
But I think for the team to medal and really achieve, I think there has to be a collective kind of performance. You can have three or four players that play at 8 or 9, but then I think the rest of the team, you just need, yeah, everyone has to play their part, I think, especially when you get to the big games against, yeah, India, New Zealand, Australia, Wales, even in that group game, I think that's when everyone needs to stand up. But I think those would be the three, I think, for me, that really, I think can make a difference in different lines. But I think, yeah, I think they're the ones.
I tell you, the other two I'd throw in, you know, Nick Bandrak obviously has come in this year into the Pro League team and has been scoring. I think, you know, he's had a good 12 months, I suppose, emerging into the senior international team. The other one who I think is an unbelievable player on his day, who the last couple of Pro Leagues games I saw of him was fantastic, was Albury.
Yeah, little Olds.
Yeah, just like stuff down the left baseline, just creating something from nothing.
Yeah. I agree. I think they're definitely. I mean, Banders has done it. If you look at the league, he's done it for years. He did it when he was 12, 13, and he was still the same, doing the same sort of stuff then. I think he just has a natural ability to. I think with a forward for me, just the ability just to kind of be in the right place at the right time. I think. That is a natural ability to be able to predict where you feel the ball is going to fall or getting into positions where almost predicting where it's going to be. And I think he has a real natural instinct of just being in the right place at the right time. But I agree. I think it'll be really interesting to see if Banners' record, I don't know what it is already, but he's really quite impressive with his caps to goals ratio already.
Yeah.
And he's been really good off the top of the corners as well.
I mean that helps.
I don't think he flicks a ridiculously fast ball, but I think he has a good ability of putting it in the right place, which half the time's the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I completely agree. And I think Olves is I've played with Olves a long time with club hockey and in the Tokyo cycle. God, I'm showing my age. He was, yeah, again, was in that, and I think probably unlucky to drop out the squad at that point. I think that wasn't necessarily down to his ability. I think it was just to do with the numbers within the squad and the balance and how they changed it a little bit with the EDP and stuff. So he kind of fell into a different bracket.
Yeah.
But I think you can see that's helped him. And I think, the level of his performances from what I've seen in the Pro League, I've not seen loads and loads of it. But from what I've seen, I think he's been brilliant. And I think he's a super talent. And I think, yeah, I'm glad he's doing well. I think he deserves it. He's not had the easiest ride, but I think, it's starting to really show now in how he's playing.
Well, that's So if you were to take a punt, where are they coming? Where are they going to finish, the men?
Oh, that is a good one, isn't it? If I'm taking a punt, I'm going for a silver medal, and I think they'll lose to Australia in the final. Oof. But I think if they get to that position, then it's a one-off game. Who knows? But if I had to, if you said you got to put your money on this, your life, I think I'd maybe go there. But it's a tough one, isn't it? But I think it'd be really interesting. I hope the boys do well, and I think it'll be a nice challenge. It'd be a great tournament for all of them to have family there, and I think that's the big thing. And who knows, when you get to those big crunch games, let's see what happens.
I'd love them to get to the final. I've got final tickets for the men. And I've also actually, the 1st of August is like the big day where New Zealand play Australia and England play India in the pools. So it's probably like the one that's going to decide, you would imagine, who's playing who, who's going to be first, you know.
I think that'll be great. I mean, those games would be great.
They'll be good.
New Zealand and Australia is always tasty. And I think, I think the India-England game would be brilliant as well. So I think, yeah, I'm with you. Where's your money going?
England?
No, you. Who do you think? Who do you fancy for it?
Australia are going to win overall, I think.
You're there as well.
Yeah.
I think they just look a bit too good on paper. But I
have to say, the quality of the men's tournament is really good, I think.
Mm.
The teams that are there this year, like South Africa, miles better than they have been in years. Like the two Cassiums are absolutely lightning.
Yeah.
They could cause a few upsets in that Australia pool.
Yeah, I think that pool's a
death.
Well,
I'd
yeah.
hate to be Scotland.
Yeah, or Jacob with Aldo. We're just saying, nice easy games to get Scotland off to start against New Zealand and Australia or the other way around. So it's nice for them, but I think you agree. I think the men's tournament's setting up to be a nice one, and yeah, let's see what happens.
And obviously, you're not going to slate Chris Griffiths on the podcast, but if you were to, what would you say?
what would I say? I don't think I can say what I want to say on the podcast about him. I love him really.
He's a Brummie, isn't he? So
he's a Brummie boy, yeah.
Big tournament for him.
A big Villa fan. Home tournament. It's the Chris Griffiths tournament. Everyone's there for him.
Is that what the trophy's called?
Yeah, it's the Chris Griffiths Games.
Right. Okay.
He is Mr. Birmingham, the Grealish of England hockey. No, I'm going to stop now.
Right, well, thanks for coming on, Ollie.
Pleasure, mate.
And I'm glad you're enjoying yourself in Holland, and maybe buy a bike lock.
Yeah, exactly. Important.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose another bike.
No. All right, cheers, mate.
Nah, pleasure, mate. Thanks for having me, and I hope we catch you soon.
Yeah, true, man.
Yeah.